Welcome back to the Sports Ticket, brought to you as always by Kiefer Brothers Automotive in Beloit, your home for fast, friendly auto repair. And here to talk some Chiefs football and even a little Royals baseball possibly, because the Royals now have this open checkbook. And Seren's only hoping to get a piece of the pie. Seren Petro, 810 WHB in Kansas City, is joining us. First of all, happy holidays. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. Happy holidays to you and all your listeners. And I'm pretty sure, I think I was just called a mooch, but I'm not sure.
Doesn't sound like you're really having a big problem with it, though.
No. I didn't say it wasn't accurate.
Yeah, okay, good. I just want to confirm that. Well done. All right, let's jump into the Chiefs. Of course, the biggest concern for Chiefs fans, obviously, is the wide receiver position. But I want to start with the positive, and that is Rashee Rice. I mean, where would this team be if Rashee Rice has not emerged the last 3 or 4 weeks?
You know, I hope people appreciate that. I've always said about you, Wade. I'll tell you what, that Wade, he's a positive guy. He's going to find the silver lining. And I don't care how bad the receivers are or what kind of, you know, just absolute dreck is going on the field. He will find the silver lining. He's not going to start with Rashee Rice's fumble again that happened in this game. No, he's going to talk about the positive nature of Rashee Rice. What a wonderful holiday spirit to have. No, you're right, because I think whether it's because of the knee injury early in the year or just age, it does look like Travis Kelce's slowing down a little bit. So they needed somebody else to step up and be a weapon, and he's been that guy. And look, I know the drafting of Sky Moore has been a disappointment, and it's amazing. We joke around here that, you know, 15 years from now, 20 years from now, whatever it is, at the retirement press conference of Brett Veach, you know, he may have 5 championships under his belt, you know, 11 conference titles. And the first question will be, why didn't you draft DK Metcalf?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, that's all people seem to care about. You took Mecole Hardman over DK Metcalf. Never mind the incredible run of defensive backs they've taken and all that. Well, the wide receiver position, if it's not DK Metcalf over, why wasn't Mecole Hardman not taking a DK Metcalf ticket? Well, Sky Moore stinks. Well, wide receiver position is probably the most volatile position to draft after quarterback. It's a tough one to hit on. And so, you know, the fact that Sky Moore hasn't been that good, but Rashee Rice is a guy that over the last few games, if you put together his numbers and he would average them every game, he'd be on pace like 1,500 yards, and, I don't know, 16 touchdowns or something like that. He's been an absolute stud of a draft pick that they got in the second round, and which is a sweet spot for drafting wideouts. Not only was DK Metcalf taking second round, but so was A.J. Brown, and so was Deebo Samuel. And they look like they may have that guy. So, to his credit, he kept firing. And yes, I think you nailed it. Rashee Rice has been absolutely what this offense needed and has really kept them afloat. Listen, and we are spoiled. It is still a top 10 offense. It's just not number one with a bullet like we're used to.
Yeah, Seren Petro, 810 WHB Kansas City, host of the program's weekdays from 2 to 6. You can listen to him online as well via the Sports Radio 810 app. Yes, yesterday we had this talk about belly aching, complaining, whining, I kid you not, on this show, and about how we need to look at things in a more positive light. So I just started the show following up on the coattails of what we said yesterday. But unfortunately, we do have to address the elephant in the room, and that is the poor play of some of those other wide receivers. Bless their heart, they're trying really hard. Kadarius Toney, you mentioned Sky Moore, who's on the IR. MBS hasn't done much this season. You know, I think a lot of people, including myself, have been like, okay, what about Richie James? I mean, if these guys can't get it done, let's give Richie James a shot, and he at least has a longer track record in the league. I did notice the Chiefs are maybe going with some more plays with 2 tight ends, maybe even a 3rd tight end, but please don't throw the ball to Blake Bell. So they're trying to adjust to what they have and their strengths and their weaknesses, and I know it's a marathon, not a sprint. But where do the Chiefs move forward here with the wide receiving core? And please don't tell me. I mean, if you do and you believe it, that's fine. But don't be like some of these Chiefs fans that I know here in North Central Kansas trying to tell me that Justin Ross is going to save the day.
No, I won't. I mean, the reality is they're not going to move forward. This is it. This is what they've got. There isn't, I hear Jarvis Landry's name and everybody wants, you know, did Josh Gordon not teach us something? Did right. Kelvin Benjamin not teach us something? Like, guys are on the street for a reason. There is nobody out there who's a 1,500-yard, 10-touchdown wideout just waiting to be picked up, right? Like, that's not going to happen. And The Chiefs have tried it a couple of times, and they may try it again here coming down the stretch. There may be somebody that they pick up. We'll see what happens. But you don't expect any kind of appreciable jump in production. Like, Rashi Rice is the only guy that's shown the signs of being able to get better. I think MBS can be better, but he can't be a star, right? Yeah. He's not going to be a true number one. He can be what the back of his football card says he can be, which is he's played with two Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and it's not going to get any better. Whatever his best year is, divide that by, you know, three games, you know, divide it up by 16 games or 17 games, how many he played that season. Take it times three, and that's the best you can expect over the last three games from MBS. I think you can expect him to be better because he's been better in his career. But he's a veteran. There's no ceiling left to be had from MBS. Sky Moore, as you mentioned, is on the IR, and I think we're getting, you know, dangerously close. I'll give him one more offseason. Year two and year three can still be a jump year for wideouts. And they'll bring him back, and they'll give it a go. But for me, I didn't see it in his rookie year. I don't see it this year. I don't think there's much more there to be had. I think we're just going to be chalking that up to being a bad pick. To me, I wish they'd use him more the way that, like, Wes Welker was used. Little drag routes, short throws underneath. He just does not present a big target, and he doesn't get separation down the field. So I think he needs to be more of an underneath zone buster. But Andy Reid likes bigger guys for that. That's the role that right now Rashi Rice is playing, and Travis Kelce plays, and Juju Smith-Schuster played last year. He's got a smaller receiver. He wants him getting separation down the field and throwing the ball up to him. And Sky Moore's just not capable of doing that. And so, I am not on team Justin Ross, because Justin Ross doesn't create separation either. He, too, would play a similar position to what Rashi Rice is doing in this offense. And so I don't see the spot for him. And I think it's time. I understand Andy Reid wanting every guy that's active, that's a skill position player, to be a threat, for the team to have to spend time preparing what he may draw up for each and every guy that's eligible to be out on the field each game day. That does burn reps, and, you know, it stretches the defense. I understand that. But at some point, you got to play the guys who can play. And I specifically haven't mentioned Kadarius Toney because he can't play. He can't catch. He can't line up. He doesn't even know. I think the most telling thing, and I think it may be finally sinking into Andy Reid, because on the Monday Zoom, and we haven't had it, it's pushed back to tomorrow with the Monday game. We haven't had his next media session yet. That'll be Thursday. But on his Monday Zoom, he pointed out, you know, somehow, I can't remember what he was talking about, but Richie James' name got brought up, and he said, listen, he's got to play more than two snaps. That's on me. That's my mistake. And I think what he's saying is he has heard it in the room. I think people probably over the last couple of weeks, people have been saying, listen, play Richie James instead of Kadarius Toney. And I think Andy Reid's the guy that's been championing Kadarius Toney. We know he's not the guy trying to throw him under the bus because he keeps running him out there.
Yeah.
So he's at least part of the think tank that thinks Kadarius Toney can give them something. And I think the message by Monday, whatever conversation was had flying back from New England, whatever tape he had looked at, I think there was finally an idea that, okay, I've got to play somebody else. Kadarius Toney can't catch the ball down the field. He doesn't know where to line up. He doesn't know how to line up. The most telling thing was right after he had the bobble that turned into an interception, he comes out on the field, lines up basically exactly like he did when he was called for offsides, throws his hand over towards the ref, but never looks for assurance that he's lined up onsides. And I don't know if you noticed, but he's brought right over to the sideline, and Andy Reid starts talking to him. Because the officials are like, dude, he's lined up offsides.
Yeah.
When he throws his hand over there, he does not even understand. He is just mimicking what he's seen other people do. He does not digest the concept that, no, you're pointing to the official to say, am I lined up okay? And you have to wait for him to go, yes, you are, or no, you need to back up. He didn't even look at the official. He just throws his arm out there because he's seen people do it. Yeah. But he doesn't understand what it is they're doing. And you know he has been talked to about this, and it is still not being digested. You can't play with someone who doesn't even understand the rules and concepts of the game. And can't catch, yes. I repeat again. So I know we wanted to open being positive. I'll be positive if Kadarius Toney isn't active. You can't cut him because there's a cap hit. If you want to try another offseason and cut him next training camp when he doesn't get it, I'm fine with that. But there's no reason for him to play. Patrick Mahomes on the sideline told you everything you need to know. Don't jack with the Hall of Fame quarterback. He's not happy, so get the things that make him upset out of his face. And that is Kadarius Toney.
Yes. Amen. I agree with that. It's Ren Petra, 810 WHB, host of the program weekdays 2 to 6. Our guest today talking Chiefs football, talking a little Royals baseball here towards the end. You mentioned the growing frustration with Patrick Mahomes, and I thought it was twofold, obviously, on that play against the Patriots. One, it seemed very clear that they had just talked in the huddle about, okay, guys, let's finish this out. Let's not make a mistake or anything like that. And then, of course, boom, Toney looks upfield before he catches the ball and then deflects it into the air. And then on top of that, I'm sure he's tired of Toney dropping the passes he puts literally into his hands. But what about Mahomes and what he's dealt with this year? I mean, the offensive line, I think, has been good or decent. I don't think the offensive line has been a train wreck. His receivers are not getting separation, thus he's holding the ball longer. And actually, he's had some time to throw the football. And then, he's most dangerous when he scrambles. And then if receivers can be on the same page with Patrick Mahomes, which it seems to be the only two that are, is Kelce and now Rashee Rice. But what about Mahomes and the season that he's had, the frustration that we have seen here in the last few games, the last few weeks, combination probably officiating, the receiver dropping passes, the penalties, the turnovers, and everything else. But yet, you look, and I think I read a stat yesterday, Mahomes still has the most yards in the National Football League. His completion percentage is very high, if not near the high of his career, and would be certainly higher than that if they wouldn't drop the ball every other time he throws it. What about his season, and do you feel like this is a guy that's going to turn it up a notch here as we go into the playoffs? But does that even work if you turn it up a notch but guys can't catch the ball?
Yeah, I think, you know, you remember the Spinal Tap? You remember that movie? I don't know if you're old enough.
Yeah, I am. I'm old.
You're pretty old. You're old like me.
Yes, sir.
Listen, the movie Spinal Tap, for the youngsters out there who haven't seen it, it's a mockumentary, right? It's a fake documentary about a rock band, and the guys are just, you know, pathetically stupid. And one of the guys, he's showing him all his guitars, and he's like, yeah, this one, I have this one. It goes to 11. He's like, well, what do you mean? He's like, well, you can turn it up to 11. He's like, well, but the knob still, it just rotates the same amount. He goes, yeah, but it goes to 11. Right? Like, and the comedy of it is, that obviously it doesn't go to 11. The thing can go as loud as it can go. It doesn't matter what numbers you paint on the dial. It can only go so far. Patrick Mahomes gives you 10 all the time. You don't get to paint 11 out there in front of Patrick Mahomes and say, okay, he's now going to play 10% better, which is one of the things that irritates me. You and I have talked about this before about Mike Sweeney. You know, Mike Sweeney had hit a solo home run and a sack fly, and you'd go into the ninth inning down 3-2, and Mike Sweeney would come up, and he'd drive one to the wall, and a guy would make a game-saving catch by jumping over the wall and robbing Mike Sweeney of a home run. And the first call I'd take on Royals postgame was, Mike Sweeney's got to do more. Mike Sweeney's got to be clutch. He's got to come through in that situation. It's like, he did everything that the team did was on that guy. I know somebody else has to do something, right? And that's why I say the receivers are what they are. You can find other places. There are guys, I think Rashee Rice can still grow. Like I said, I think there's still some room for growth out of the younger players and for guys to play back like MBS. But the concept of Patrick Mahomes suddenly doing even more, he literally cannot catch it, right? To quote, you know, Elvis Gerbach, he can't throw it and catch it, right? It's just not something that is going to be in his realm. All he can do is play the way he wants to play. Play the best that he can, which he gives the Kansas City Chiefs every single snap that he is out there. He is the ultimate competitor. We finally saw him boil over. And the fear is that if you keep asking him to do everything he can and play at this level by putting inferior players around him, that he will become frustrated. He'll become angry. He'll begin to look around. I mean, the ultimate fear is that eventually he says, I want out of here, the way Tom Brady did in New England, and wanted to go to a place in Tampa where there were plenty of weapons for him to deal with. You know, when the Broncos got Peyton Manning, they sold their soul to Peyton Manning. They already had Demaryius Thomas and a good wide receiver core, but they went out and got Wes Welker for him as well, even when they needed maybe some defensive players or a running back. They got him weapons. When you get that guy, you keep him happy. Now, back when Peyton Manning came to the Broncos, there was more of a case to be made that you could still win with defense or running the ball. Now you have to be able to throw the ball. So much of this league and why the Chiefs have won is because with 1:21 left in the second quarter and one timeout, Patrick Mahomes is a definitive threat to score 7. He's almost a lock to get 3. You go to the end of a game where fourth down is now employed, they're down 3, they're down 4, there's 51 seconds and he has 2 timeouts, you're going to get the field goal. It's just a matter of whether or not you're going to get the touchdown. Scoring points late is the key. That is the ace in the hole for teams. If you can do it, you're never out of a game. You can win in any situation. The games where the game plan's working great and you're blowing people out, fantastic. But the get-out-of-jail-free card is scoring points late, and nobody does it better than Patrick Mahomes, but somebody has to catch the ball. And so I think now, not only, one, to keep him happy, because it's the most important piece of the equation, but two, it is the best way to win football games. You have to continue to find weapons. So, look, he's frustrated now. I think he'll be fine if in the offseason they do to the wide receiver position what they did to the offensive line after that 2020 Super Bowl loss to the Bucs, and they bring in a couple of veterans, or at least one veteran, and draft a couple more wideouts. Then I think he'll be fine. But there's no doubt he is frustrated, and that's not something you want to see for a long period of time if you're the Kansas City Chiefs.
Absolutely. Travis Kelce, I'm interested in your opinion on this. You're closer to the situation than obviously we are where we are now. But Travis Kelce, to me, listen, I saw somebody say the other day, well, he can't retire, doesn't have anything lined up. I'm like, are you paying attention? I mean, him and Jason Kelce have the podcast. He's got endorsements. He's obviously dating Taylor Swift. I mean, a lot of people know who Travis Kelce is now. They did before. Now even more people know who he is. He's talked about the injuries, the pain he's gone through. His brothers talked about it. He almost retired after last year. Jason Kelce, he's not. You mentioned earlier he's slowing down. I think the injuries, the wear and tear, going deep into the playoffs year in and year out, eventually catches up. I think the guys like a Travis Kelce, and in particular running backs, we even see Pacheco being banged up last year and already banged up this year, and his shelf life's probably not going to be long, as is any running back that runs that physically in this league. And it is, I think, kind of amazing that Travis Kelce's avoided a big time injury to take him out for a whole season, other than when he first came into the league. But do you believe that Travis Kelce? Do you think it is a legitimate possibility that Travis Kelce may hang it up after this year?
Yeah, I think it's a possibility. I think, you know, anyone who plays football for a decade is on borrowed time after that. And he was in that 2013 draft. Didn't play that first year, but a couple of snaps, had the microfracture surgery. But, you know, he's been at it for a decade, and he was a little bit older, you know, with some of the trials and tribulations he had at the University of Cincinnati as well. I want to say he was like 26 that first year he actually did play. So he's, you know, he's gotten a little bit older quicker. Now he doesn't play like Robert Gronkowski does, challenging tacklers and balling guys at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, they keep him pretty free. He's had largely a wide receiver life out there. But, yeah, I think, you know, I'm with you. I will compound that to say that before the year, he on his podcast said, or going into the season or early in the season, said, listen, I want to play this game as long as I can. You know, he sounded like the guy that, look, they're going to have to force me out of here, that if someone's going to have to tell me I can't do it anymore, that it'll be an Antonio Gates-like ending where it's like, okay, you're really not producing that much, and he's going to keep playing. And so I think, look, you know, after you've had the knee injury and maybe he's going through treatment, like I said, maybe what we're watching is not a guy who's slowed down at all, even though the advanced data where they track him says he's been slowing down a little bit each year for 4 or 5 years, and it's his intelligence that really makes him such a viable threat out there, and that's not going anywhere. We hope, knock on wood, it's a game that concussions are a part of the game as well, but we don't think it's going anywhere. And you wonder, is it just the you know, going through the rehab and dragging his knee around and feeling bad when he gets up. And so in season, you're like, God, do I need this? And then you get out, you get a month off, you sit on the beach for a while, and, you know, you look at the Super Bowl ring or you read some records or you see who else is doing well, and just the fire relight, and you're back and ready to go again. I don't know. I think you know, it's a reality, and I think the Chiefs would be wise to invest in the tight end position when the opportunity arises. But let me say this. Whether it's tight end, whether it is wide receiver, which we know that they definitely need. Left tackle, we'll see. The early returns on Wanya Morris are pretty good. Donovan Smith is not signed beyond this year and has battled injuries like he did last year with the Bucs again this year. So left tackle, something you're going to have to look long and hard at in this draft. Isaiah Pacheco had surgery at the end of this year and has had surgery in this year. Clyde Edwards-Helaire only has one more year left. Most people aren't satisfied with what he gives them. Jerick McKinnon's 31 years old. Running back is something you need to look at. Chris Jones, I don't think, is going to be back. Derek Nottie's on the last year of his deal. Michael Dana is a free agent after this year. Willie Gay is a free agent. Drew Tranquil's not signed. L'Jarius Sneed is a free agent. You know, quite as it's kept, this is a tremendously put-together roster. Credit Brett Beach for the work that he did. And you're always going to have some hole when you put as much money into the quarterback position as Patrick Mahomes requires you to do. That position's the wideout right now, so they'll chase something next year, even if they fix the wideout. But quiet as it's kept, there's a lot of work to be done this offseason. So, while you're trying to keep it going, Kelsey's back. Do you go ahead and grab a tight end to only play 35-40% of the snaps, or do you grab one of these other need positions? I think people need to respect and appreciate the job that the Chiefs have been doing since Patrick Mahomes came onto the scene to keep a very talented roster around him. But it is not easy, and it will not be easy this offseason.
At the end of the Bills game, we referred to it, you referred to it, Kadarius Toney lining up offsides. He lined up offsides multiple times during that game and ended up costing the Chiefs a touchdown, as we know by now. And then that was Mahomes with the meltdown on the sideline and then everything after the game. And I looked at it, and I'm like, yeah, he was lined up offsides. It is what it is. He was lined up offsides. Having said that, though, to me that was a compilation of the week before with the DPI that wasn't called when MVS was mugged down the field against the Packers. It's the picking on Jawan Taylor early in the year, so forth and so on, which leads me to the question. NFL officiating, is there any way to make this better? Do you have any solutions? It's easy for all of us to complain and bellyache, right? Anybody can do that. The harder part is what's a solution to improve the officiating, unless I'm wrong, and you think the officiating's good, even though I know that's not true. I know you can't stand the officiating.
Where to begin, yeah. Right? Like, I will simply say that I'll go back to when the officials were on strike and we had the scab refs. And people said, you know, they couldn't wait to get the regular refs back. And the first week, it was a debacle. And it was the same old symbol. There is no difference between the guys that are actually officiating the game and the next wave of officials that are out there. I don't think these guys want to do a bad job. I think they definitely want to do a good job. But I don't think you can be a part-time anything and be the best at it. And that's what they are. It's complicated. Listen, we could do an hour, 2 hours on, you know, how do you create full-time officials? What do they do when they're off? You know, when they're not actually reffing the game, how do you go about it? Like simple things like, hey, fly them all to practices every week, all over the place. It's like, you know, let's go. NBA refs are on the road the whole year.
Yeah.
You know, get them on the road, get them in practices, get them watching football, get them seeing players, get them in tape sessions. I mean, there are things you can do to create full-time officials. And I understand that they want guys to be, you know, physically capable of being in position to make the calls. So I understand that there is a level of athleticism, for lack of a better term, physical fitness, that is certainly necessary. You don't see any, you know, tubby NBA refs trying to, you know, go up and down the field. Soccer refs aren't 300 pounds, right? I understand that being in shape is a part of it. But stop hiring bodybuilders and start hiring officials.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if it's Mrs. Goodell enjoys the vein on the bicep of the official making the call when he's out there. I don't know if there is a oil down and, you know, thong contest before the year to choose these guys and who could hit the crab or the double bicep pose the best. But stop hiring bodybuilders and start focusing on guys that understand and know the game. And what's amazing is one of the guys who doesn't look like a bodybuilder is Carl Cheppers. And if you watch Jets preseason,
HBO?
Go to camp and Hard Knocks.
Yeah.
If you watch Hard Knocks, Carl Cheppers is literally like a child seeking an autograph, talking to Aaron Rodgers, and it's pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic. You can tell that he is just a giddy little kid that's, you know, living out a dream and not functioning as the, you know, regulator of a sport, of a multi-billion-dollar industry. And that's just a wrong mindset to have. And so, look, it is staggering to me that a group of 32 people that have never been told no, that are responsible for billions and billions and billions of dollars of net worth, are freight trained by a bunch of part-time employees when it comes to labor negotiations. It is absolutely stunning to me that the NFL referees, who are as bad as they are able to keep their jobs without penalty, and the refs and the owners have never said, enough of you. This is what it takes to be a ref. Here are the rules. You take this job, or we will find someone that will. We'll pay you more, And but then this is the requirement. The NFL reffing is absolutely atrocious.
Well,
it has been for quite some time.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Very inconsistent. That's the whole key. The word consistency is what every coach at any level says. I just want consistency. You know, be consistently, I guess, inconsistent is what they are. And I want to disagree with you on one point. My wife is not a big sports fan, but she has a poster of Shane Hockley in the bedroom, and it's very embarrassing on the closet door. I've tried to, you know, anytime I go near it, she says stay away. So they gained at least one fan because of Shane Hockley.
Wait, is that the one with the black and white striped Speedo? Wearing the black and white striped Speedo?
I really don't want to say anything more, okay?
It must be up at the man cave of the Goodell house as well.
Probably so. There's at least a couple copies out there. Oh, the rest of the way for the Chiefs. They got winnable games, obviously. Christmas Day, the Raiders at home. The Bengals are playing very well with Jake Browning as the backup quarterback, who has been outstanding. And then the Chargers look like absolute train wreck right now. Do you expect the Chiefs to win the last three games? And if so, do you think they will get the one seed, or do you think that ship sailed when the Jaguars lost to the Ravens?
I do think they'll win the last three. I think the biggest challenge is this week against the Raiders. I think the Raiders with Antonio Pierce, they've got a coach that they're playing for. And so I think that's dangerous. I think any one of these teams, if you get them down double digits early, I think they'll curl up and go away. And I don't see any kind of, you know, Herculean effort as they're all booking their vacations right now. I definitely don't see it from the Bengals. I know they're playing good football, but a lot of it is what's going on around the quarterback. And at some point, I think the Chiefs defense can put it on the quarterback. And he hasn't really had to go out and have a Joe Burrow-like day. So I think the Bengals, they'll be focused. I think the Chiefs will want to make a statement there. And I think you hit it. The Chargers are a mess. So I think the Raiders are the biggest challenge, and they're a heavy favorite against the Raiders. But will they get the one seed? I don't think so. I think that they I think the Baltimore Ravens, I would put their win total at 2.5, and I would bet the over on these last three games. I think Baltimore is on a mission, and you know, they, or even maybe 1.5, I'd put it at, but they, you know, they've got one game of margin. I think they'll get by the Dolphins. I think the Dolphins will lose. They've got Cowboys and Bills still to come. But I don't see the Ravens losing, because I think the Steelers are falling apart. That game starts to look easier. San Francisco game's a tough one, but they got to lose twice, and I don't think that's going to happen. So I think the Chiefs are going to be the 2 seed. They're going to play at home. Let's hope it's not the Bills in a 2-7 matchup. I think there's a pretty good chance the Bills will catch the Dolphins and actually you know, be sitting there as the 4 seed, or maybe the 3 seed even. I think the key is you don't want to face the Bills. Anybody else that you face in that first round shouldn't be a problem. If you can get to the 2 seed, you get the home game in the next round. And as we know, give the Ravens a chance to blow it.
Yep.
They've done it before. They were the 1 seed in 19 and lost to the Titans. That's what gave the Chiefs the whole playoff game. So I don't think they'll get there, but I'd give them still a 35% chance of getting there to the 1 seed.
Okay. Chiefs, how's this end this year? Where does the Chiefs make it to the Super Bowl? Do they get to the AFC title game a 6th straight year? They don't? Who knocks them off? What, give me the crystal ball from Seren Petro for the Chiefs.
Yeah, I think that they're good enough to win to beat every team out there. Seen that. But they have this fatal flaw that is not getting better, and I don't know why we would think it would be better over the last 3 weeks. I see them losing a game because they also can't just, you know, when they need to score, they got to take the score. And I think there'll be some, you know, instead of Andy Reid draining the clock as they're going down for the winner, you know, like the one thing about the game against the Bills that people neglect to remember is that they went down and they were going to score, but there was going to be over a minute left for Josh Allen. Like, right, they can't just methodically pick what time they score. If they can score, they got to take it. So they're a flawed end-of-game team. They're good enough to get on a roll and beat anybody out there, but probably they lose. I'll have them losing in the AFC Championship game. Excuse me. Probably on the road to a super determined Baltimore team. That would be my prediction. But, you know, if we lined up and they played Baltimore today, I would probably take the Chiefs. I'll probably take the Chiefs in any one game. I just don't think they're good enough to play 4 games against playoff-caliber teams and not make the critical mistakes somewhere. And it may be in the wild card round. It may be in the division round. But somewhere I think they probably get tripped up.
You're very well could be right. The one thing I go back to is about this time last year, I know we were talking on our show about how special teams is what it is. They were having all kinds of problems with special teams. And we said, it hasn't got better by now. It's not going to get better. And then special teams ended up being pretty important for the Chiefs in the playoffs. And there's a couple of key punt returns in particular. And Butker was solid. And the coverage was good. And the Chiefs actually fixed the special teams. I know that's a different dynamic than your wide receiving core. But if there's less Tony on the field, Sky Moore is out. And now Richie James could be at least a reliable guy that can drop the ball. And as you said, MBS improves just a little bit. And Rashee Rice keeps going the way he is, and Kelce stays healthy. There's, I know lots of ifs I just said in there, but I think that's a better recipe for success, to where there could be enough improvement to where this team can certainly make that deep run into the playoffs. And with the defense, the way they've played this year, there's certainly always that chance. But I agree with you. I might be a little bit more optimistic than some people out there, because I just think the AFC is so wide open. And the Ravens, I mean, they look good sometimes and dominant, and at other times I scratch my head and wonder what's up with the Ravens. And until I see Lamar Jackson really play well in the playoffs, I guess I'm still going to probably, if I had to be a betting man, I'd still put my money on the Chiefs.
Yeah, and I think that, and listen, they may be mathematically the favorite, but like when you're a heavy favorite going into a playoff run in the postseason, you're like 34%, 35% to win it all. You're still, the field is still a better bet against any one team in any Super Bowl. I mean, the Chiefs were the heavy favorite in 2020. And we saw what happened there. They ended up losing to the Bucs. And maybe that's the outcome, is they get in there against the 49ers, who look like an absolutely complete team if they're healthy. And they end up losing by 10 points to the Niners. They were down 10 points in the fourth quarter last time to a 49er team that's not as good as this one. I think they may be the favorite, but if they're the favorite, they're like 21%. You know, if they're the favorite, there is no strong favorite to win it this year. But I won't argue that they have as good a chance as anybody, I would say, right now, save the San Francisco 49ers, who do seem to be playing at another level. However, look, there are only four teams in the NFC with a winning record, and that means the 49ers and the Lions and the Cowboys and the Eagles, who are the four teams with a winning record, are getting 12 out of 17 games against inferior competition. I mean, the NFC is a dreck, and perhaps they look great because they're beating up on bad teams. Now, the Chiefs can't beat those NFC teams, as we know. They're having their problems in beating the Eagles and the Packers and the Lions, so that is something to keep in mind as well. But I think your point is valid. Like, and that's the beauty of being a Chiefs fan right now. When you have Patrick Mahomes, every year could be a championship year. No year is guaranteed to be a championship year, but every year could be. And every year you're in the fight, and after this kid has played his 15, 16, 17 years, whatever it is, he's going to wear, I think now I would say, 4 or 5, maybe 6 or 7, but certainly there's a couple more championships out there to be had. There aren't 10, and he's not a failure if he doesn't win every year. But, you know, the beauty of it is, as a Chiefs fan, everyone's not talking about the Chiefs right now, and you still are rooting for a team that's a major threat.
Absolutely. Before we let you go, the Royals and their spending spree and who they brought in, what's your overall thoughts on the moves that the Royals have made?
Yeah, I like it. I mean, I think, you know, John Sherman's certainly inspired to try to win a vote. That's a whole, you can do 3 more hours on that. I've done it, trust me, on everything that goes into that conversation. But he's trying to win a vote for a new stadium. But I don't think this is just driven, you know, look, they are short-term solutions, right? Like, that's one thing to keep in mind. It's not like they've solved one of the spots in the rotation for the next 7 years. You know, everybody is really just locked into 1 year, with the exception of Lugo, who's locked into 2 years. He can make it 3 years. And by the way, you know, any one of these player options that are picked up, and, you know, that's the guy who probably had a bad year.
Yes.
Right? If you have a good year, you figure to get back out on the open market and try for a longer contract. So a lot of these are just one-year solutions. And so in some ways you can look at it and say, well, this is just a PR move to try to win a vote. Yeah, I mean, there's an element of that. I won't deny that. But it's also smart. Like, signing 30-plus-year-old guys to 5-year deals or 7-year deals is not good business. And if you can get Michael Wacha to sign for a 1+1, you know, then you're not on the hook for when he does break down. One of these guys, one of the pitchers for sure, figures to break down. Or Hunter Renfro is on the downslope of his career, and he figures to be worse than last year, and you're not going to want him beyond just 2 years. So, look, the long-term success of the Kansas City Royals is still tied to them drafting better, signing in the international market better, developing better. That is still a part of the equation. But to develop and to effectively develop, winning is part of development as well. If you're playing meaningless games, I'll point out Angel Barroa in 2003. Angel Barroa was kicking the ball over the place and looked like the player he would go on to be. for the first, you know, quarter of the season in 2003. And the fans began to boo him because the team was winning and the games mattered. And he played so well the rest of the way that he won the Rookie of the Year. Mm-hmm. And the Royals had a winning season that year. We're in contention into September. Winning is a part of the development process. You know, playing competitive games is a part of the development process. And who knows what we'd be looking at from Daniel Lynch or Chris Bubich or Jackson Kowar or even Brady Singer if they'd been brought up and not asked to save the franchise, but just be a part of a winning ball club. This, or at least a competitive ball club. That's what this is now. So it will help their development. There's no doubt the long-term health of the Kansas City Royals will be determined by their ability to draft and develop and do those kind of things. But this helps that process, and it certainly helps the ball club that'll go on the field in 2024. And if it's not a competitive team, and look, the AL Central got worse. The division winner lost a lot of pieces. The Twins lost a bat, a couple of good arms. You know, they got worse. The Tigers got better. I don't think anybody feels like the White Sox got better. The Guardians probably got a little bit worse with some of the, you know, moves that are going to get worse with some of the moves that are being projected with some of the trades that they're expected to make along the way. So you don't have to be that good in this division. And I think if you're a Royals fan, the owner spent money on talent, and if it doesn't work, J.J. Piccolo got Cole Reagans for Aroldis Chapman. He's proven that he'll make trades, which wasn't the case in the past, and that he can identify some talent. So I don't think there's any way to be anything but excited. Christmas came early,
yes,
Royals fans, and there's no way to knock what they're doing right now in the offseason.
All right, time for the off-the-wall question, and since I've been labeled Mr. Positive, I will have to change this question. The best Christmas gift that you have ever received. My original question was not the best, but I am Mr. Positive. So what's the best Christmas gift that you have ever received, Sir Petro?
The one that I had the, like, you know, the, okay, I got the gift and I'm going to, you know, I just can't put it down type of thing. You know, listen, my daughters, my wife, my family, you know, all the obvious. I don't like I could be that sap and give you all that. Those are the obvious. Those are the things that really matter, our family. A great set of in-laws. I'm blessed. You know, my wife's got a huge family, and I've got, like, just me and my mom, and I've got a huge family, and they're all great people. And so those are the things that really matter. Let me say that first of all. But that's not fun. Nobody wants to hear about that, right? The best gift that I ever got is I got a 10-speed bike. My mom's from Newton, Kansas. And somehow my mom got a 10-speed bike down to my grandmother's house. We went down there to have Christmas down there, and it was my first 10-speed, right? Like, and that was the thing. Everybody else had 10-speeds. I was always a little younger than everybody in my grade, so, like, I didn't have one. I felt bad that I didn't have a 10-speed. I still had the old Schwinn, you know, and I really wanted it, and I didn't think I was going to get it, right? Because they hit it. You know, you could see a bike somewhere, mm-hmm. and it had these cool foam grip handlebars and everything, and I got that thing, and even though it was like 36 degrees, I rode around Newton, Kansas for like the next 2 days while we were down there, just rode that bike everywhere. That was the best gift. Didn't know it was coming. My mom surprised me. It was exactly what I wanted. That was the best gift I ever had. It was awesome, and I had that bike for a long, long time. It was a green, and it was a Schwinn too, by the way, but it was a 10-speed. It was a green Schwinn with black foam handle grips. It was absolutely fantastic.
Do you still ride bikes?
Oh, God, no. Oh, no. No chance.
I want to see you ride a bike, dude. I would enjoy that so much.
I got on an exercise kick one time, and I went out and I bought, I don't know, you know, the bikes are so expensive now. I dropped like $500 on just a good basic mountain bike. I'm like, oh, you know, I'm going to ride to work. I'm going to do this. And I got it home, and I was shocked. I'm like, God, these things are light, man. This is going to be great. I rode around the block, and I parked that thing, and I did not get on it again. I ended up selling it to a guy for like $50. I'm like, listen, this literally does not even have 1 mile on it. Just get it out of my garage. I'm tired of looking at the dismal failure I am when it comes to exercise. This reminder every time I get into my car, take this bike and get it away from me. And he has ridden it for years. No, my legs hurt for like a week after just going around the block. I'm like, oh my God, what was I thinking? This was the most miserable decision I've ever made.
Well, I appreciate you sharing the story about your biking days, and I will say that may be the best gift, but the really, really good gift that may exceed that could very well be the newly released Roger Goodell bodybuilding ref calendar that I will send to you as soon as the holidays are over, because I want to wait till they are discounted at the store.
Yes, which they always are. I love it.
Absolutely. Hey, man, how can people follow you on social media and listen to your show? Let everybody know.
Yeah, at Soren Petro, S-O-R-E-N-P-E-T-R-O on Twitter. I'll say Instagram. I have plans to, that's one of my New Year's resolutions, do more on Instagram. I don't do much now, but feel free to follow there. And you can hit my podcast. There are links there at SorenPetro.com, S-O-R-E-N-P-E-T-R-O, Red, Gold, and Bold Chiefs podcast, Too Deep NFL podcast I do with Eric Eager from Sumer Sports, great analytics guy in the NFL, and Jeff Chedia from the NFL Network. And then Randy Gisarli and I do Kauffman Corner podcast, so if you like Royals baseball. We're going to be doing our all-time draft. I won't complicate you with it, but that's coming up over the next couple of weeks. We will not go dark at the holidays, so if you want to hear some Royals baseball, check that out at Kauffman Corner, wherever you get your podcasts.
Soren, always appreciate the time and your knowledge. Merry Christmas to you and your entire family. Stay safe, and safe travels wherever you may be going, and we'll talk to you again in 2024.
Absolutely, Wade. It's always a pleasure. Just as we wrap up the year, it's always fun talking to you. You're very knowledgeable. Love talking sports with you, and miss seeing you and your son. Let me know when the whole family's up here. Can't wait to get together with you the next time you're in KC.
Sounds like a deal. Soren Petro, 810 WHB Kansas City. The program weekdays on 810 from 2 to 6. Catch it.